All right, we're ready to hear argument in the fourth case, which is Hardeman against American River Transportation Company. Mr. Dripps.
May it please the court. This case was brought as an admiralty case in the district court pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 1333-1. The district court issued a final order of dismissal with prejudice. This court therefore has jurisdiction under section 1292A3 under this court's decision in the Deering case. The issue in this case is whether plaintiff satisfied Rule 8A2 by pleading that ARTCO's negligence in permitting a group of barges to break away from their moorings was a proximate cause of plaintiff's fall into the river and subsequent injuries when he was emergently repairing damage caused by the breakaway to the barge. The third amended complaint pleaded a set of facts establishing that the injuries were a foreseeable consequence of ARTCO's negligence in allowing a group of barges to break away from their moorings and cause downstream damage.
Can we jump ahead to looking at, did American River Transportation Company breach a duty of care to Mr. Hardeman? And if so, looking at those factors, how do we get there?
The duty, excuse me, Your Honor. The duty of care is locked up in terms of foreseeability as well as the proximate cause analysis. Hardeman was assigned to repair damage to the barge. The general rule, as set forth in Prosser and Keaton and the numerous cases we've described in the brief, is
I noticed that we didn't talk through the open and obvious doctrine.
Open and obvious would not apply where the plaintiff is following an order to do specific activity in a specific place. He didn't have a choice.
And who did the order come from then?
His employer.
All right. And so, again, the duty of care American River Transportation Company owed to Mr. Hardeman.
Okay. The duty they owe is the same that they owe to the barge that was damaged. The cases say that, in particular, the Williams case, which is an Illinois appellate court case, says that the duty is the same to the rescuer as it is to the rescuee. So their duty not to damage the barge extends to Hardeman as the rescuer of the barge.
All right.
You're looking puzzled, Judge Pryor, and I'm sorry. It's the cases say that that duty is transferred to the rescuer and is imputed so that ARTCO's duty not to damage the barge extends to Hardeman because he attempted to remedy that damage. Okay, did that answer the question?
I understand.
Okay. The issue of proximate cause, which is what the district court decision relied on, is one of fact, and in this case is not suitable for disposition on a motion to dismiss. ARTCO's negligence...
Let's assume that the citation of Rule 12b-6 was a mistake. Is there any reason why this can't be decided on the pleadings under Rule 12c?
It could be. Sure.
So maybe the district judge just cited the wrong subdivision of the rule, but we can say 12c, and then it's what's left.
Well, it's still a question of whether we pleaded sufficient information to state justiciable claim.
The conclusion that the causal chain is simply too long for liability is, I think, a legal conclusion, not a factual one. That's how we've treated it in other similar cases.
Sure. And this court's decision in Karahogic versus JBS Carriers adopts that rescue doctrine and says that proximate cause is not satisfied, that a plaintiff who is injured in a rescue attempt is allowed to negate a presumption that his intentional act of rescue is the superseding cause of his injuries, thereby allowing him to prove that the defendant's negligence is the proximate cause of his injuries. So I understand the attenuated causation argument, but the rescue doctrine specifically says that's okay in a case like this. It's not too attenuated because it is foreseeable. And in this case, ARTCO not only should have foreseen, but actually did foresee this chain of events, as illustrated by their own pleadings in other cases.
Mr. Dribbs, when did you raise the rescue argument?
That was raised, Your Honor, pretty much throughout the case. Our initial complaint alleged that he was injured in an attempt to save the barge. The subsequent pleadings alleged that he was responding to an emergency. The one thing I will say is that we did not cite Karahogic in the district court. We did make the argument, and we did cite Glenview Park District for that same proposition. Glenview Park District makes clear that the analysis of proximate cause in admiralty cases like this cannot ignore a prior act that contributes to the ultimate injury. Here, defendant's fleet breakaway clearly contributed to the injury at issue. He wouldn't have been out there except trying to save the barge. I'd also point out the Frederick versus Mobile Oil case, which also adopted that rescue doctrine in an admiralty case. The reply brief in this case outlined extensively how we made the same argument in the district court, in our opening brief, and finally in responding to the defendant's arguments. The defendant's brief opened the door when it said that proximate cause does not include injuries to those attempting to remedy the danger. And we were certainly free to respond to that challenge with a specific case citation, which we did. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Mr. Dripps.
Thank you.
Mr. Hockman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Rob Hockman for American River Transport. Judge Pryor, let me begin where you began on this question of duty and proximate causation. There are really two sides of the same coin in this situation. But I think Mr. Dripps' answer is actually revealing. He said the duty owed is the duty to the barge. And this whole case turns because he didn't injure himself. Mr. Hardiman didn't injure himself fixing any damage to the barge. He injured himself slipping on ice. It makes no sense to say that American River Transport's alleged negligence with respect to its barges, which caused damage to the barge that Mr. Hardiman boarded, was extended to the duty to keep ice clear of that barge. That's the problem. I think that may be why you were confused when you heard Mr. Dripps' answer, because the rescue doctrine, which he's relied on heavily in his brief, and Judge Flom it really does come late in the game, and I don't think we opened the door because we said nothing that's inconsistent with the rescue doctrine. The rescue doctrine does not change the legal question of proximate cause, as Judge Easterbrook indicated. The rescue doctrine just basically says it applies when in these kinds of situations that the cases deal with, where a tortfeasor creates a danger, and that's a danger that normally people would not go to. But when there's imminent danger to life of others, people can reasonably be expected to go to it. And so the duty extends to the rescuer. That's all it means. But the duty extends to the rescuer to the exact same extent as it extends to anybody else, which is the danger created by the negligence. And everything breaks down in this case because the ice was the cause of the injury, and our negligence has nothing to do with the ice. And that's fundamentally what the district court understood. That's fundamentally the attenuated chain of causation at issue here. And I think when you add it all up, you get to exactly where the district court did. Because on the facts alleged in this complaint, to rule that Hardiman alleged proximate cause as to American River Transport would amount to a rule of proximate cause with no principled limit at all. And of course, that's the whole point of limiting duties and proximate cause as the attenuated facts on this case. A brief word about emergency, because Judge Flom, you asked about when it was raised. In the complaint, it's notable, he doesn't say there's an emergency. He doesn't say there's imminent danger to anyone. He just says he's called to respond to the damage. And in fact, I think what you see in the complaint actually suggests that it's quite the opposite of an emergency, that the damage was alleged to have happened on the night of on the night before the day of the injury. The day of the injury occurs roughly around 11 a.m. And he's also asked to perform duties on the barge that are very similar to duties that he routinely performs. And you can see this is all in the complaint in the normal course of his business. The complaint is laid out with the initial claim against SCR first, where his normal duties are laid out. And then it's just carried forward. He's asked to go and deal with this hatch cover, which is something he routinely does. So even the question of emergency, whether the rescue doctrine is really in this case, is questionable. But you don't need to worry about that, because even if you think it's plausibly enough in, the rescue doctrine doesn't solve the problem of connecting ARTCO's alleged negligence to the ice. And for that reason, we respectfully request that you affirm. If there are no questions? Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Dripps?
The third amended complaint of paragraph 31 specifically alleged that it was reasonably foreseeable that in the course of performing repairs, employees such as plaintiff would sustain injuries repairing the damage. That's clearly alleged. The same paragraph also alleges that it was foreseeable that these repairs would be conducted under emergent circumstances. And to the extent that ARTCO is making an issue out of evidence, that I would respectfully submit is for summary judgment, not for judgment on the pleadings, and not for a motion to dismiss. Here, ARTCO had a duty to refrain from causing downstream damage. That duty extended to the plaintiff because he was the one attempting to repair the damage under exigent circumstances. In that case, the law recognizes not only a legal duty to the plaintiff, but proximate cause as well. I thank you, and I ask that you reverse the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.